I think we need, as a species, if we can imagine a species that's awakened to oneness, think of what would change. Think of all the wars that would stop immediately. Think of the abuse of the environmental systems that would stop immediately. And I think we have an evolutionary pivot to make this transition, to awaken to this truth of oneness. In that process, we're not shedding our humanity. We're actually taking humanity into the next level of our spiritual transformation. We're moving into an awake humanity. We're moving into the birth of the diamond soul.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. Welcome to Season 2 of the Main Street Mystic Series. This is our first episode of Season 2. My co-host Paul Mills and I have had lots of fun with Season 1. And we began the series by asking, why do people have transpersonal, metaphysical, and mystical experiences? And what do they tell us about humanity's future? Now, in Season 2, we are ready to go deeper, wider, and farther. The timing of these conversations is essential as the collective psyche is thirsting for a message of hope. When we pondered Season 2, what emerged was quite exciting. Our intention is to take a deeper dive and ask the questions, what are the new structures, new abilities, new understandings, and new ways of being? What are humanity's emerging innate and evolutionary capacities? How do we navigate during these evolutionary times of transition? And how do we transcend to the next level of functioning and find the courage to do so? So today not only marks the first episode of Season 2, but it also marks the first episode of a three-part conversation with Chris Beige, author of LSD and the Mind of the Universe. We couldn't think of anyone better to explore these important questions. Chris writes, humanity is rapidly approaching a breakthrough of evolutionary proportions. From his profound and unique perspective, we think you will agree. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness. As I introduce my co-host, Dr. Paul J. Mills is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He has expertise in the fields of cardiology, psychoneuroimmunology, behavioral medicine, and integrative health. He's the author of the award-winning book, Science, Being and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Hey, Paul, welcome back to Season 2. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Thank you, Julie. I feel the same way, and I'm particularly excited, of course, about this interview series with Chris and this being the launching of Season 2.
I am too. I'm so excited. And you have had the privilege to meet Chris in person. So I'm going to invite you to introduce him to our guests today.
Yep, my absolute pleasure. Dr. Chris M. Bosch, PhD, is Professor Emeritus in the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies at Youngstown State University, where he taught for 33 years. He's also adjunct faculty at the California Institute of Integral Studies. He's Emeritus Fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences and on the advisory board of the Groff Legacy Training Program. Chris's passion has been the study of the philosophical implications of non-ordinary states of consciousness, especially psychedelic states. He's an award-winning teacher and an international speaker. He's also written 4 books, and I want to list them out so our listeners have a sense of the dimensions and domains. One of these books is titled Life Cycles, a study of reincarnation in light of contemporary consciousness research. Another book, Dark Night, Early Dawn, is a pioneering work in psychedelic philosophy and collective consciousness. The book, The Living Classroom, is an exploration of collective fields of consciousness in teaching. And the fourth book, LSD and the Mind of the Universe, Diamonds from Heaven. And this is Chris's story of his 20-year journey with LSD, which he'll be sharing with us a bit. And Julie, you just hinted, and to add another piece to Chris's biography, I'm pleased to note that it's my good fortune that Chris lives in the same small town that I do, Weaverville, North Carolina. We met in person a few weeks ago, and it's just the beginning of what I believe will be an incredible friendship, meaningful, and one of exploration and discovery. So Chris, I'm very enthused to have you here. And as Julie already told our listeners, this is number one of three conversations that we're going to have together on just a wide breadth of topics relevant to we as human beings, relevant to humanity at large, and really our place on Earth, of course, but also on the cosmos itself. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Paul. And thank you, Julie. It's a real honor to be here with you today.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to digging into this. And I just think it's fascinating how the universe put you guys just a few miles apart at this stage in your life. And so it was fun to discover that just serendipitously when we began planning for this conversation. So I'm kind of envious. I wish I were there so I could be in those fun conversations and dinners and gatherings. But we are going to, Chris, I think it's important to just give an overall maybe synopsis of the journey that you've taken. It's been way more than 20 years, but literally you had a 20-year really important journey that you write about in your latest book, LSD and the Mind of the Universe. We're going to dig deep into the birth of the future human, and then we're going to move toward that mind of the universe in the third session. But I just want to help our listeners understand where the depth and breadth of your wisdom and knowledge comes through. So I'm just going to let you give us that brief orientation, if you would, for our listeners.
Yeah, I think that's important because I know the things that I'll be talking about lie far beyond our ordinary sensory-based perceptions, and they're not theories or speculations, but they derive from years of working in visionary states of consciousness. I began this work in 1979 as a young academic. I met Stan Grof's work. I began to do high-dose LSD-assisted psychotherapy using Grof's protocol. I worked at very high levels at 500 to 600 micrograms, and this just represented a revolutionary journey. It took me on a deep journey into the universe. There were many levels to this journey, many stages of the journey. I did 73 sessions over 20 years, paying a lot of attention to recall, integration, stabilization of the states, entering into 5-6 different layers of consciousness over time, work to stabilize my level of awareness at each level of consciousness before moving deeper into the next level. I always felt myself being guided by and in communion with an intelligence, which I think of as the mind of the universe, the intelligence of the universe itself, what I call the creative intelligence, just to give it a name. And it put me through an education. It took me through many levels of cosmological initiation, and it also put me through what you might think of as many psychedelic sweat lodges. It asked a lot in order to gain access to these levels of awareness. So that's the basic background.
Incredible. If I can add to our listeners, as you just listen to this summary of Chris's work and the vast range of dimensions of his exploration, and he has all this knowledge and experience and wisdom, really. And honestly, this is one of the most important books, and your other books too that I already listed and shared. This, for me, Chris and Julie, is just vitally important information for us as human beings. So many people look at we as human beings as being these isolated creatures on this planet Earth, And we're not. We're so far from that. And we have so much fantastic potential as beings. And Chris is going to guide us through his insights and really revelations, direct insights about that. And I just hope this series will be really inspiring to our readers and open their own consciousness to their own possibility of their own life and then humanity at large. Mm.
Thank you, Paul, for that. And before I take us into the first question of inquiry here, I'm just reveling too when you were talking about the 73 sessions and the 5 to 6 levels of consciousness. I imagine that's piqued the curiosity of our listeners. Like, what? Okay, what are they? I want to learn more. And we, there's so much in this book that we could unpack here. I agree with Paul. It's a really important book for our times. I'm going to encourage listeners to go out and get this book and also check it out on Audible. Chris reads the whole narrative to you in his own voice, which it's really nice. It's nice, especially getting into the second half of the book where you really go deep. It's just like, I can feel you. So it is a transmission as well. So I encourage the listeners to go get this book, learn more. And perhaps, who knows, after our planned 3 sessions, maybe we'll bring you back for some more, because the levels of consciousness and everything we're going to explore is so important. And I'm with Paul on that one. So this session, we want to talk about the future human. The birth of the future human is chapter 9. And we've really kind of tried to keep that awareness into that to begin us into this conversation. And I'm going to read a quote from the book that perhaps we can just kind of pause and muse into here. You wrote, "When the shell of the private mind dissolves, experience opens to a landscape so vast, it's hard to find the right words to describe it. The mind of the universe, the cosmic mind, the great expanse. One falls into it, explodes into it, melts into it, sometimes cataclysmically, sometimes so gently it feels like the most natural thing in the world. We are not in control of these expeditions. We show up, do the work, and make our requests. But in this collaboration, a larger intelligence sets the course. What we experience seems to be a combination of what the universe wants us to know and what we are capable of knowing." Chris, you go on to write about the crossroads humanity is coming to and of the powerful forces that are really taking us into this future that will change us. And you say at the deepest levels of our being. I really want us to pause here and begin with a little dialogue between the three of us, because I think Paul and I both agree with you. And the thing that's fascinating about this book that I am so attracted to is that many of your experiences that you write about are experiences both Paul and I have had spontaneously in our lifetimes, from me having a near-death experience to just being this little child mystic to who I am today. We have so many of the parallel experiences, insights that are the same, even one story. Maybe I'll get to bring it up because it comes up in chapter 9 later in this interview. But I want to start here. With what you wrote, I think this is important. What is it that the universe wants us to know? And what is it that we're capable of knowing? Important phrase there that came out in this quote. What is it that the universe wants us to know? And what is it that we're capable of knowing?
Well, by starting at this chapter, the birth of the future human, we're actually starting in, I think, the most important chapter of the book. Because this is the chapter that touches all of our lives, all of our children's lives, our grandchildren's lives. It's the most profoundly important subject matter in the book. And it's most surprising. When I began this work, I thought this was like a journey of personal transformation, of personal healing and awakening. And that turned out to drop away pretty quickly after the first couple of years of work. And so much of the journey focused on our collective transformation, collective healing, collective awakening. So starting back in 1991, I began to receive a series of visions that were sort of slipped in with the other insights that were being poured into me. And these visions were consistent. They went on for about 4 years. They were consistent. And the message was that humanity was coming to a turning point. It was coming to an epic defining turning point, a transition, that after thousands, hundreds of thousands of years of preparation and transformation leading up to this point, we were coming into the critical time, the critical passage. And after this sequence had expressed itself, we would be living on the other side in a radically different psycho-spiritual configuration, that this would lead not only to a transformation of the political order and our economic and industrial order, but a profound transformation of the human soul. And then about a year later, I was given an experience of what I think of as the death and rebirth of humanity. If there is going to be a profound spiritual awakening of the, not just individuals, but the entire species, and that's what seems that the creative intelligence is driving for. It's not just driving for the enlightenment or the awakening of individuals. It's driving to for nothing less than the awakening of every human being on the planet. If this is the case, then we know that when mystics go through, before they get to a spiritual awakening, they go through a dark night of the soul, a time of tremendous destructuring, tremendous challenging period of purification. I was taken into the death and rebirth of humanity because if humanity is coming into a time of deep spiritual awakening, it must first go through this period of deep transformation, of deep purification. And I'm going to step back now, and we'll go back into that in just a minute. So let me put in another layer. One of the things that I've learned both academically and spiritually in these initiations, psychedelic initiations, is that reincarnation is just a simple fact of life. It's just part of how the universe works. We're not in this game for 100 years. We are in this game for thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. So to understand what's happening, we have to understand this basic fact. We have been developing, moving towards this time in history for 100,000 years. I mean, at least since we developed a 50% larger brain about 100,000 years ago. So my sense is that gestation is a long process, and humanity has been gestating the future human for 100,000 years. Now we are entering the time of labor. Now we are entering that day when the water breaks and there's nothing but hard work ahead for this relatively short period of time. And at the end of this labor, a new child will be brought into human history, a profoundly transformed humanity. I think that what we're looking at is nothing less than a transformation of the substructure of the collective psyche that lies underneath all of our individual psyches. This is a shift in what you might think of as the plate tectonics of the collective psyche. That is, all of our individual lives are informed by, structured by this field of collective intelligence. And it also absorbs all the learning of individuals into its massive collective intelligence. And I think it's been absorbing our learning and absorbing our pain and suffering and our virtues and everything that we've done right and wrong. It's not so much individuals are changing, but really what I track is this profound eruption that's taking place at the deep levels of the collective psyche. When I move into another part of my visionary experience, it focuses on reincarnation and what the structure of this future human will be like. And I conceptualize this in terms of the birth of the diamond soul. I think what's happening at a deep structural level is that we've been learning and growing thousands of years. We've been making progress, maybe stepping backwards, becoming slowly more compassionate, more intelligent, more cooperative with each other, slowly, slowly. Classically, in Eastern traditions, which have believed in reincarnation for thousands of years, the basic view is to achieve some state of spiritual realization, some state of awakening or enlightenment. And as soon as you reach that level, you have permission to leave the physical universe. In the Hindu tradition, spiritual awakening, enlightenment was called moksha, escape from samsara. But that's not the visionary experiences that I was guided into in my work. In my work, the goal of this transformation is not to achieve enlightenment individually or as a species and then leave to take refuge in some off-planet spiritual paradise, but to go through this profound spiritual awakening and literally bring heaven into earth, to let spiritual reality so deeply suffuse and integrate with our physical incarnation that we begin to literally be able to bring the structure and clarity and compassion and wisdom of heaven into our physical existence. Now, if an entire species is going through this transition, if an entire species is going through a transition which heals the human heart of all the pain and suffering that we've acquired, all the wars and tragedies over all these centuries, and an opening of the human mind so that the mind is capable of absorbing and intaking the love and compassion that the universe is pouring into us all the time. And actually, another layer, it's not just an opening of the human heart, and it's not just an opening of the human mind, but literally a transformation of our physical senses, that our senses are just at the early stage of what they are in the process of becoming. Such a species will create a completely different history on this planet. And I think that is the challenge that we're coming into. We're coming into a profoundly demanding time that will tax us to our absolute limits. In this process, I think we are truly giving birth to a different form of humanity and a different future for humanity. And this is something we do for ourselves, but primarily we do it for our children and our grandchildren all over the world. All the children of the world.
Beautiful. Just the imagery, the gifts to come, so to speak, for humanity to birthing itself into the gifts that we've been, let's say, created for. And there's two things. One, based on what you just described, I want to read something Richard Tarnas said about your work, about this specifically, and this is some of the utter importance and uniqueness of your work. Your insights into, quote, the relationship of the human psyche and its personal ordeals and awakenings to the larger collective suffering and spiritual transformation of the entire human species. I love this aspect of your work because it puts each of us as individuals in an understanding in our relationship to the larger collective, literally as a kind of a oneness. And with that said, I want to dial in a little bit because you also write in the book about the importance and the challenge of each of us as human beings. You write, quote, to break the grip that the mind, body, ego, self has on our consciousness. That is a challenge many of us are aware of, and many of the traditions, Vedantic and otherwise, speak to this. What can you share with us, Chris, some of your insights into that as a journey? How does your average person really begin to effectively begin to find that freedom? Because it's their own journey, as you're saying, but also we will then be contributing more efficiently, let's say, to humanity's awakening as well.
I think you're absolutely right. We are fractal aspects of a larger transformational process taking place. So everything we do, everything we are, has been informed by this larger collective process. And all of our efforts, all of our struggles and our victories feed into this larger collective transformation, so that there truly is no such thing as private enlightenment. All of our individual efforts at awakening are all pouring into this larger collective process. Now, I have two contexts in which I can respond to your question. One of them, I'm a professor of religious studies, so I've taught world religions and I've taught Eastern religions, and I have a certain sense of how the spiritual traditions have understood and taught the processes of spiritual awakening. They're fundamental, you know, they're the core processes. First, stop hurting anyone. If you want to reach enlightenment, stop hurting people. And that calms the mind down over long periods of time. And then second, begin to be generous, be compassionate, give money away, give things away, be compassionate. And we're breaking down slowly the isolation of individual egoic consciousness. And then as the mind calms down more and more from a lifestyle of generosity and compassion and non-injury, then we turn to the processes, the techniques of calming the mind further through concentration, meditation, and then encouraging the mind to unfold its layers, unfold its secrets through Vipassana meditation. And then once you move into things like Vajrayana Buddhism, which probably is a system I know the best, you have all sorts of deity practices and guru yoga practices and all sorts of ways in which human beings cooperate with the spiritual forces of the universe in order to bring about a purification and an enlivening and awakening and a communion with the intelligence of the universe and its magnificent presence. So that I have kind of from a book knowledge, and I practice these things as we all do. Then I have the psychedelic path, which is it's a specific spiritual path which aims at therapeutic healing, which is what we see so much in the psychedelic movement today. It also aims at spiritual awakening, which is also an important but different than healing. It's a healing of the soul, so to speak. But in my work, I found, given the methodology that I chose to work with, and this is not a methodology that I recommend. If I were doing it over again, I would be much gentler with myself. And I really encourage anyone who works with psychedelics to not do what I did and to be gentler with themselves. Because in this method, my spiritual journey became a journey of cosmological exploration, which is a very different journey undertaking than spiritual awakening. But to come back to your question, psychedelics are an amplifier of consciousness. And if you use the hours which you were in this amplified state, the same thing happens that happens on a meditation cushion. It just happens faster. And because it happens faster, it tends to be a bit more cathartic. It tends to be a little more convulsive. So it took about 2 years in about 10 sessions to sort of break me of my historical body-mind egoic identity, a tremendous kind of physical purification, emotional purification, having to confront the deepest questions about whether life itself is meaningful, because everyone we love, everything we love, everything will all be dead in a relatively near time. And in such a world where everything precious dies, how can we find true and genuine meaning? So you have to confront the deepest, deepest fears that we have, that it's really a rigged game and it is meaningless. And you're going through that, and I went through reliving my birth, reliving deaths from previous lifetimes, until I reached a point where the universe turned me into the exact opposite of everything I had known myself to be. So I'm a white male, an academic, passionately concerned with the meaning of life. It turned me into the opposite of that, and it would not let me experience anything except from within that alternative. I became women. I became women of color. I became women who had no philosophical interest at all in the meaning of life. It was like the perfect hell for an Ivy League philosopher. And then when I yielded, it scared me to death, but when I yielded and I surrendered, I went through this transformative process where I was taken into the lives of women, hundreds of women, under the arm of the Great Mother, and was given a deep experience of the world of women that I wish every man could have the experience of. Now, I believe in reincarnation, and I believe we've all had lives of the opposite sex, the opposite gender, but I don't think this was about recovering my former lives as women. I think the deeper message was, where you're going, gender does not exist. Let go. And I think this is what the essence of what ego death is about. We have a certain sense of identity that differentiates us from everyone around us. And that's true. And that ego in that respect is beautiful. I mean, it's a tremendously important evolutionary step. But it also isolates us. It isolates us from each other in a deeper way. It isolates us from other species in a deeper way. And therefore, that individuality has to become transparent if it's going to understand what's really taking place at a deeper level. And by transparent, I mean that in a technical sense of the Buddhist term of shunyata, emptiness, emptiness of self, which doesn't so much destroy individuality, but it makes individuality transparent so that it is able to take in input from the larger surround that it is part of. And in that process, one learns, much to our surprise, that the ego has been a prison. It's beautiful, but it is a prison because what flows into us when the ego loses its grip on us is the most beautiful cascade of insights and communion and love, which could never reach us as simply, you know, private, egoic, private selves. And this is the teaching of all of the spiritual traditions. All of the traditions are trying to help us experience this deeper dimension of the universe, the deeper dimension of the divine.
As you were speaking, Chris, I was reminded, so you were just describing this pressure and the experiences of you shedding your identity that you've been so used to and being shown so many others. And you write in the book that all the while that this creative intelligence was trying to strip you of your identity that you've known, at the same time, it was, quote, the presence was protecting your individuality. And I love that because it's what you're just saying. Mm-hmm. We as a kind of individuated consciousness is utterly, utterly precious in the universe. And there's a reason for it. Hopefully we'll understand it more through our conversations. But at the same time, yeah, it must grow. It must be stripped of things that keep it, in separation and isolation. So thank you.
Yeah.
Julie.
Yeah.
I love this. And I'm gonna stay right here with the ego because you also said something that I paused to reflect on here. And you wrote, ego death destroys the existential isolation and constant self-referencing that organizes our ordinary experiences of the world. That's helpful. And you reference the small self opens to the species self. And from your learnings, I'm wondering, Chris, if you could explain to us, what's the difference between a species self and the divine cosmic self? Because you're talking in the spiritual traditions, and most of us will go, oh, we've ascended from this separate self thing and we're in the cosmic or we're in the divine. And you bring in this idea of species consciousness. So can you kind of bring that into the conversation and orient us as to what is species consciousness and how is that different?
The classic monistic spiritual traditions describe creation as a process of unfolding from a primary singularity, a oneness, And the oneness begins a cascading process of unfolding that goes through a number of spiritual levels unfolding, many levels, and then eventually manifests the beginning of the physical unfolding, the Big Bang, and cascading down, down. So between the consciousness or where we are right now in our individuated awareness and the primary source, there are many, many layers of unfolding, of divinity unfolding. One of those layers, kind of close into us, is this consciousness of our species, which you can just imagine from a cosmological perspective is pretty far down the evolutionary creative matrix. Usually when we think of it, when spiritual traditions talk about dissolving of the ego and entering into communion, they tend to describe it in terms of entering into communion with the source of existence, with the divine, with the soul and this context there where the soul lives, or with the pure transparency of emptiness, which puts us into this intimate experience of the primal state of awareness, what Buddhists call the nature of mind or the awakened mind. All these are true and all of these are important. But between us and the oneness of the universe, there is our species mind, our species intelligence. And for reasons that I have a certain understanding of, but a lot of my work involved working with the species intelligence, both in terms of working to heal the massive suffering that's been accumulated in the species over generations, many generations, and also in terms of kind of helping infuse the energies of the divine into the species from a higher transpersonal perspective. The species mind is it's vast, it's human, it includes all of history. It has a temper and a quality which is human-like if we let go of our individual frame of reference for understanding this. It includes all of human history. And of course, this is simply one layer. If we push beyond the species mind, we enter into what we might think of as the earth mind, the mind of all the species and all of the story of the planet. If we push beyond that, we could go into the galactic mind, the solar mind, the galactic mind, and then we're into the deep, deep, deep territory. But because I think the divine or the creative intelligence of evolution is trying to bring forward something centered in the human species, a lot of my work is centered there. And it's interesting. My work is not really centered in dialogue or communion with other animal species or with other species. Many people who work in the shamanic traditions do. They have intimate relations there, but mine has not. And I think it's because humanity represents the greatest threat to all life on this planet in our current wounded condition. And if we can heal humanity, then all other life forms on the planet will be safe. And that's what is the work of the hour. The species mind is simply the larger fabric of the historical mind of humanity. When you move beyond the species mind, as I did at one phase of the work, after spending years at this layer level, and I went into archetypal, deeper archetypal structures of the cosmos, the entire history of humanity fell away from me. I found that you go through a deeper form of dying at that level than you do with individual ego death. Because when you die as an individual ego, there's a sense in which you still operate within the cognitive framework of human consciousness. But when the entire structure of human consciousness falls away from you, it's a radical abandoning of one's history and past. So that all the mythologies, all the religious structures, all the interpretive structures, all the historical structures, all the ancestral structures, they fall away. Everything that humanity has used to understand, to question and understand human existence, our place here, falls away. And you move into an immediate communion with the intelligence which gave birth to humanity in the first place. Mm. And the way I say it in the book is that nature stood naked before me once again.
I just want to just like pick your brain for a moment here, Chris, because I think this is essential to our collective evolution here on the planet. When we transcend, you're talking about the ego death and losing that history. And then we have species mind, and we're going through this evolutionary process. I often will refer to this in my teaching as the human as a species superorganism living on a planetary superorganism within a cosmic superorganism. And when people go, oh, like I get the superorganism piece, and there's so much we can learn from that. So in this evolutionary process, when we talk about also even to say there's something beyond this conscious evolution, there's something beyond unity and oneness and peace on earth. And people would be like, what's beyond that? Like, how can we get beyond that? And you're starting to present these levels to us that we can see ourselves in this expanded role that really goes back to the essential nature of unity. You write that oneness, this evolutionary trajectory now is more than interconnectedness. And I think when we talk species mind and then planetary mind and then moving into the galactic or the cosmic, we can kind of see losing history. So I want to go back to that. Is our role right now the evolution of the species mind into this losing the history of that to bring in the divine human and this next step of humanity on this journey? I'm wondering about this trajectory. Are we in the species mind going through the species mind death from your point of view?
I don't think we are in the process of shedding humanity in the same way that I experienced in my individual journey when I was taken first into the species mind and then beyond the species mind. And I don't think that's what's trying to happen in history right now. I think what's happening in history is that we have reached a point where we either grow up or we die. We cannot continue to run this planet on the basis of individual egoic consciousness, even a compassionate consciousness. We must radically change our experience of ourselves and the world, or we're going to lose this planet, because we're just, the ego is too primitive, too wounded, too limited to rise to the challenges that we are currently facing.
So it sounds like we're in a stage between those two, the ego death, individual egos going, and we're not quite to the species mind evolution yet.
I think we don't have to have an experience, a conscious experience of the species mind in order to participate completely in the historical transformation that we're undergoing. Each of us are already hardwired, if you will, into the species mind. Each of us has a certain kind of quantity of spiritual transformation that has been assigned to us to do. Each of us have our own karmic trajectory, our own way forward in this. And if we, the most important way to contribute to the transformation of the species and the birth of this future human is to fulfill our individual spiritual karmic destiny, to become the fully realized being or the fully realized artist or social transformation person or whatever it is our particular karmic destiny gives us as our highest potential, the greatest good that we can become. If we do that, we energize the species mind in invisible channels and we support the evolution of everyone around us and the transformation of everyone around us. I don't think right now we're trying to shuffle off the human species. I think what we're doing is taking in the energy that's being brought into us as being made available. So I'm doing a gesture that's bringing it in from above, and that's part of the sensation. But the other part of the sensation is it's rising up underneath us. It's coming up inside us and pushing out everything which is inferior to its extraordinary grace, and activating everything which resonates with its extraordinary blessing that's emerging. In this churning process, we are facing many pains of history, years, hundreds, generations of violence and terrible agony that we've encoded into our collective awareness. And we're shedding this. We are shedding all the attitudes and all the structures, the habits of our culture, which divide this from that, you know, this race from that race, this religion from that religion, this country from that religion, this strata of society from that strata, all these divisions, which ultimately keep us separate. Because when the human heart opens, when the human heart opens to this deeper level of existence, there is a sense in which our entire history, our incarnational history, becomes alive within us in a way that previously it had been quietly sleeping. And our communion with the divine, which has been previously maybe sleeping, awakens. And when this happens, always, with all spiritual traditions, the signal of this happening is an explosion of compassion. I think we are basically being triggered into oneness. We are awakening to the truth of oneness. That is the reoccurring theme of all the spiritual traditions. All life moves as one. The universe moves as one. There is a core oneness of life. When we awaken to oneness, naturally we awaken to compassion. We wouldn't want to hurt any living thing. We wouldn't want to hurt any part of the universe, because we know in our heart that it is part of the oneness of existence. I think we need, as a species, if we can imagine a species that's awakened to oneness, think of what would change. Think of all the wars that would stop immediately. Think of the abuse of the environmental systems that would stop immediately. And I think we have an evolutionary pivot to make this transition, to awaken to this truth of oneness. In that process, we're not shedding our humanity. We're actually taking humanity into the next level of our spiritual transformation. We're moving into an awake humanity. We're moving into the birth of the diamond soul.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification, because it's not about shedding our humanity. It's really about the integration of who we be as a species into the greater oneness of all life, right? And the cosmos. And I know Paul wants to get in here too. And I mean, we could go on and on in here, because I think it's really a beautiful way for us to understand what's happening on the planet right now. So Paul, go ahead and jump in here.
Yeah, I was very much enjoying the vision you were painting for us, Chris, and also in a practical importance you emphasized for humanity to get there. Each of us has to kind of fulfill our own destiny, our own gifts, our reason for being here at this time and place. And when you said that, it reminded me much of Carl Jung's work. He spoke so highly of the importance of what we call individuation, at least in his tradition. Joseph Campbell and his work on the monomyth and the hero's journey. It's all about heeding the call and coming into yourself as who you really are, as the human being in the gifts, and surrendering everything that kept you separate from your, you know, family, tribe, and so forth. So I was just reflecting what a practical and very important lessons that he and others have given us over the years, and that's how it's done. So I mean, there's so many psychological theories out there, and how does somebody come into individuation? There are multiple paths, but if you have anything to say about that as far as insights to our listeners and us here, How does a human being know and step and have the courage to step into it? And I know that involves surrender. You speak of that again and again in your book, the importance of it. And at one point in your book, you wrote, how did you say it? You've earned the right to die, something like that. Shed the false identity, shed it again and again and again. And that is much of our journey, the act of surrender.
Yeah. Carl Jung is one of my heroes. Before Groff entered my life, Carl Jung had been there for years, and I took Jung's inspiration with me on my journey. His courage nourished my courage as I was entering into this path. I want to say something about this period of history that we're entering, because I want to take this discussion of responding to this destiny out of the individual framework and focus it on our collective framework, because the period that we're entering is not simply a period of a lot of individual people rising to their individual challenges of individual spiritual awakening. It is that, and that is very, very important. But when I was questioning how, and I had been given all these visions of this spiritual awakening, this awesome transformation, and nowhere did it show me how nature was going to pull this off. How were we going to do it? And then in one particular session in 1995, a long time ago now, it took me into the death and rebirth of humanity. And this is what happened. First, I dissolved into the species mind. I just was operating at the level of the species mind. And as the species mind, I began to experience a radical loss of control, a radical undoing, a tremendous dying process. I experienced a global systems crisis that seemed to be driven by a cascading series of ecological crises. But I wasn't given a lot of detail, and I certainly wasn't given any timetable. What I was given was a profound collective experience of the human family as it lost control of life on this planet. And there was this tremendous dying, tremendous challenges, an unraveling. Life seemed to be unraveling at its core levels. It was unraveling so deeply, and people were losing life as they had known it so widely and so deeply that I truly thought for a while what I was witnessing was an extinction event, that humanity was going extinct. But just as it had reached the peak and we were reduced to the point of fundamental survival, just trying to survive, the worst of the storm passed, and we began to pick ourselves up, and the survivors began to reassemble. And as we reassembled, we realized that we were different than we had been going into the crisis. And again, this is in generational terms, not a short-term, few-year crisis, but a multi-generational crisis. Something about the crisis that humanity entered cracked open our heart at such a deep level that when we came through this, we were transformed. And as we began to reorganize, everything was suffused with new values, new insights, new principles that began to feed into one another and generate still new layers of insights and new principles and new insights. Truly, the death and rebirth that individuals undergo in careful and sustained spiritual practice was being matched by this profound spiritual transformation that humanity is undergoing. It's difficult to describe how much pain and suffering is involved. And like all of you, like you, I fear for the children of the world. I fear for the great grandchildren of the world. We're going into extremely difficult times. And it's under the pressure of being pushed up against an evolutionary wall that we will have to make very difficult choices in the years ahead. And if we choose to reinforce the choices of the past, which are save some but exclude others, lose others, we probably won't make it. But if we choose to make inclusive choices, if we include to save everyone, if we choose to act on the principles and insights of oneness, then we're going to initiate a transformation that will be self-igniting and self-transformative. It's just going to propel us farther and faster than we ever thought possible. And one of the things that came through my visions was all of this will happen faster than we have ever imagined it. This is going to happen. It's going to be a very accelerated, very intense, but accelerated time. Just like labor is not like gestation. Labor is very intense, it's very accelerated, and it's relatively short. This is the time we're going into. So what really matters is what we decide individual, the choices we make individually and collectively in the landscape that we are entering. And the landscape we are entering is going to be a very, very challenging landscape.
So to bring this to a close, because we only have a few more minutes, and this is such an unfair question, but I really want to hear you address this in, say, 2 to 3 minutes, Chris, because you've been in that collective psyche of humanity in crisis and almost seen the mind of the universe from the inside out here. What are some of those evolutionary capacities that are emerging for the human species now that will help us move through this next phase of our evolution? Do you have any insights into the innate capacities that are turning on and perhaps some of the evolutionary capacities that are coming on board?
I can only speak to that in the large scope, not in the detailed scope. There were several times in my work, and of course I had entered what I call deep time, which is time, different dimensions of time, beyond linear time into future time, if you will. And in my very last major vision at the end of my journey, I was taken deep into deep time into the future. And I experienced in several of these sessions, I experienced the future human. I experienced the fundamental archetype that is emerging in history. It's hard for me to describe the future human because it is so beautiful. When I remember it, it's hard not to cry, because we're talking about humanity with a heart healed. I mean, just magnificent, radiant compassion. We're talking about the mind in deep, porous communion with the universe, so that there isn't the static that there is now between the creative intelligence and our individual intelligence, and a body which is operating at such a high level of consciousness that it influences the very perception. Our eyes are functioning at a higher level. Every aspect of our physical body has matured into a radically higher level of functioning. I mean, so much so, I mean, truly embodied heaven on earth. The highest levels of spiritual realization, soaking into and changing not only how we think and how we feel, but the very physiology of our body. This is a very high stakes game that we're at. And this is a blessing which has been promised from eons in the past. We are coming to a critical time when the blessings are just enormous, but the work to realize those blessings is serious and demanding. It will ask everything of us. Everything that we have to give, it will ask it of us. We must make these choices, the good choices for this good outcome. And I think we will. I know that there's no guarantee that humanity will make this evolutionary pivot. And I know that from an intellectual perspective. But I know from my own spiritual perspective, from my psychedelic perspective, we do make this transition. Humanity does survive. We do come through this transition. Nature will not be denied. and the next iteration of human evolution does manifest itself, and he, she is absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, you said that you experienced the collective awakening both as a projected destiny and a realized actuality, and it was simultaneously something to be accomplished and something that already was accomplished.
And you're also right in that regard, just the nobility of the human being and the nobility of humanity as such a great gift that we will then present back to the Creator. How will we be functioning in the future as a healed being, you know, infused with the divine at every level of our bodies?
Yes. Yes.
Chris, thank you for this first conversation. I have so many notes that were left undone, and I don't know how we're going to just do three sessions. I'm so excited about the content of what you have to teach that comes from a real authentic, deep, deep well of divinity and humanity. It's like we're birthing the divine human now, and I really look forward to continuing this. Paul, any last words from you? And then Chris, any last words from you?
Well, from my side, something benign. I didn't know that an hour had gone by. I was just totally consumed. And when you said we have 2 minutes, Julie, I was a bit shocked. Mm-hmm. So yes, I've taken notes, and I will pick up where we left off next time. Thank you, Chris.
Great. Well, I just want to thank both of you for the opportunity to allow these messages to come into the lives of more people. This is not my teaching. You know, I'm just kind of passing on what was poured into me, because it was never intended to be mine or for me. It was always intended to be for all of us. And thank you for letting these messages flow through.
I look forward to a continued flow. And listeners, thank you for flowing with us today as well. I want to leave you with the words of Chris from Dark Night, Early Dawn. As the inherent wholeness of existence becomes a living experience for more and more persons, individuals will find themselves empowered by new orders of creativity that could not have been anticipated. As the encompassing fields of mind become stronger, synergy and synchronicity will increase. The sacred mind will spring alive inside the human family in ways that seem impossible from our current fragmented condition. The pain of this labor should not be feared, but used creatively. We are building a new world for our grandchildren, indeed, a new species. I'm Julie Kroll. You've been listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, we're sending you a world of love. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting The Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.